From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the Wildcast Podcast, episode 98. I'm Arizona Daily Star sports editor Ryan Finley. Here, I got two guys with me today. I got Greg Hansen and Michael Love. Lots to get to in the worlds of football and basketball. So we'll get right into it. Both you guys were at the U of A's open scrimmage. I'm using sort of big fancy air quotes when I say open scrimmage last Saturday. What'd you make of it, Michael, Greg?
Yeah, we were talking about it earlier today, Ryan. We're both complaining about how hot it was, which just probably shows you how soft we are as sports writers. We're used to sitting up in the air-conditioned press box, right. And oh my gosh, we had to sit in the bleachers in like 85-degree weather. God forbid. It was a little warm. Mm-hmm. I can understand why they don't have a lot of afternoon games at Arizona Stadium after sitting out there for about 2 hours. But my biggest takeaway from the actual product on the field was that you could tell that a new offense was being installed because it just was not a smooth operation for the most part. Whereas the defense in year three under Marcel Yates, they seemed to know exactly what they were doing, where they were going. They were kind of flying all over the place. So it's always a two-sided coin from the perspective of the head coach, you know, like, oh, the offense is good, the defense is bad, or vice versa. But that was my biggest takeaway.
GH, you were watching them. To the naked eye, is it clear that this offense is different?
Yeah, but I couldn't tell you what.
Yeah.
I could see the running backs going out for passes, which you never saw before.
Right.
Obviously, there's a lot of things have changed. And to me, what struck me right away was the body sizes of guys. And it's only been 3.5 months since their last game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the defensive guys look like regular Pac-12 players.
Wow.
Even Tony Fields looked like he had filled out some.
Yeah. I mean, they've added a couple big bodies up front in P.J. Johnson and Mikey Irving.
Sure.
They also have sort of semi-added Sione Taufahema at defensive tackle. He did not. He was out all of last season, or they redshirted him because he had a knee thing in the summer. So that's three 300-pound guys. And I was just looking at them when they were just all kind of warming up and standing around. And Mikey Irving is legit, like, big dude. Like, he looks like what you want a Pac-12 defensive tackle to look like. And whether these guys can actually play in a real game remains to be seen, but they certainly pass the eye test.
Sure. And he enrolled at the U of A early. I mean, in theory, this kid should only be like a month and a half away from graduating from Calabasas High School.
Right.
And he's standing out on a college football field. Yeah, that's impressive.
And, he and David Watson and P.J. Johnson, who we mentioned earlier, who's a transfer from San Francisco City
College. He's a big
boy, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was playing. They were doing a lot of rotating up front, and P.J. Johnson was playing with first, second, and third team units, such as they are. So I felt like that was a really good sign to see. And not only did they look good, but they were active. I mean, they were making tons of tackles for losses. Mm-hmm. They were chasing down quarterbacks. I mean, they can't tackle them, but they can, you know, touch them and get near them and they blow the whistle. So that was good because everyone knows the last couple of years, if you really wanted to run against Arizona, you could, or you'd wear them down in the second half.
Sure.
And to be able to hold the line with some big guys and enable the Tony Fieldses of the world and the Colin Schoolers of the world to make plays, I think that's ideally how they would like to play things.
GH, you wrote in Sunday's paper about how different Sumlin seemed than Rich Rod, and probably by extension Mike Stoops before him. More of a CEO approach from him, or just less screaming?
Well, less screaming for sure.
No screaming.
Wow.
But to me, he just seemed like a peaceful soul, which how often has it been since you've seen a peaceful soul?
How many peaceful souls exist in college football? There aren't
Mark Helfrich. Remember, Mark Helfrich in Oregon had a no yelling policy?
Right.
Kind of a policy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad to have a no yelling.
Right.
But I didn't hear any yelling.
Mazzoni does some yelling. You know, you'll hear, we don't get to watch practice, but you can hear stuff sometimes as you're walking by or hanging out outside. And I'm sure some of the assistant coaches do some yelling. But I asked, who did I ask the other day? One of the coaches who's been with someone for a while. Oh, it was Clarence McKinney.
Mm-hmm.
That day, Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Clarence McKinney is the running backs coach, and he's been with him since the Houston days. He's like, that's just not Kevin's style. He's not a yeller, screamer
mm-hmm.
type of guy. He's like, everyone has their own approach, way of teaching, and that's not his way. He just stood behind the offense.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed like he was just kind of taking it all in. I'm sure mm-hmm. he was communicating with the quarterbacks or whatever, but there wasn't, you know. It was a stark contrast from the previous regime, for sure.
Very interesting. Switching topics here just a little bit, Michael, because I've got you here.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched the Sunday U of A baseball game.
Yeah.
Might have been as interesting a college baseball game as I've watched in a long time. I mean, it had all the hallmarks of good college baseball, which is chirping from the dugout, guys pounding their chests. It took 4.5 hours. It was sort of your typical college baseball game. And I, not to put too fine of a point on it, but I thought the way Arizona was able to rally late against a very good bullpen gave you some hope that they might make the playoffs and might make a little bit of a run. Or maybe I'm making way too much out of a Sunday Pac-12 baseball
game. No, I'm happy to put a fine point on it or way too much of it. I think it was a season-saving rally,
mm-hmm.
honestly. Long way to go still. Mm-hmm. That was game 30. They have 56 games. There's still time to make up ground, but they gained something like 30 or 40 points in the RPI over the course of the week by winning 2 out of 3 against Oregon State.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got Stanford coming in 2 weeks, and they're number one in RPI right now. So let's say they're able to pull that off against Stanford
mm-hmm.
at their home ballpark. All of a sudden, I mean, everything looks different.
Sure.
To me, there's a huge difference between being 4-5 and being 3-6 mm-hmm. in the conference. I mean, it's just a much bigger hole to climb out of. Each of the last 2 years, they went 16-14, I believe, in the Pac-12, and that was good enough to get into the NCAA tournament, which I would say is the goal for this program. I mean, Greg, you've been around U of A baseball way longer than I have. I mean, I know there's a high standard here of making it to the College World Series or whatever, but realistically, right,
mm-hmm.
you want to get into the tournament.
You want to host the first round if you can, which is really hard.
Right now, yeah.
I just like they have, now that Rivas looks like he might be in sync, mm-hmm. Cal Stevenson, Rivas, and Nick Quintana.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not many teams have 3 guys potentially that solid.
How about Cameron Cannon?
I was going to say, you could throw Cameron Cannon in there too.
And Cesar Salazar.
Yeah. Right. So that first 5 of the lineup, you know, those are the guys. I mean, he might change the order of Quintana and Salazar, but whether it's a righty or lefty. But those guys are kind of locked in.
Yeah.
It's been kind of, you know, it's been a figuring out process with the bottom part of the lineup where he's, you know, at first he wanted to go with Travis Manio at shortstop, and then he just could realize that he wasn't getting it done. And Jacob Blass looks like he's going to be a real player here, and they missed him the first couple of nights because of root canal situation that kept him out. But, yeah, things are definitely trending in the right direction, I feel like, for baseball. And I would feel completely differently about things if they had lost that game because they just looked kind of dead
mm-hmm.
until, you know, the chirping started happening. That young pitcher for Oregon State staring into the dugout really seemed to stir up some emotions.
Yeah.
And I can tell from Ryan's reaction that you were enjoying that.
Pulled off the field by his own teammates. Pulled off the field by his own teammates because he couldn't stop yapping. Face. Yeah.
Remember when that spurred Arizona in 2012?
Yes, absolutely.
An ASU Oregon reliever came in.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
ASU reliever comes in the most exciting home weekend I've seen here.
Right.
And strikes out somebody to end the 8th and did exactly what that's the Oregon State guys did. And Arizona rallied in the bottom of the 9th and won. Robert Refsnyder running through the signal to score the winning run.
They clinched the Pac-12 title that night. Yeah. I remember Oregon, after I believe they had swept Arizona here, Oregon had a bagpipe guy.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
And they sent, there's a guy on Oregon's team that played the bagpipes. And after weekend series, he would trot out to the pitcher's mound and stand there and play the bagpipes. And he did, and somehow that got them mad. And so they you know, stuck it to Oregon. I think the rest of the year, didn't they beat Oregon by, a half game or something in the Pac-12 standings?
Mm-hmm.
And I think they lost something like 3 games the rest of the way after that bagpipe shenanigans. College baseball, it's funny. It's one of those sports where I think you're seeing more and more now that some of the exuberance that you see in, like, the World Baseball Classic, you're seeing more and more of that. And with that comes heated moments and real momentum changes, I think.
I mean, to me, in all sports, I've always found it easy to differentiate between taunting and celebrating.
Yes.
Like, if you turn to your own dugout and have the same exact stare or reaction, no one notices or cares. No. It's when you turn to the other dugout and you're staring them down, and then there's chirping going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I think his name is Kevin Abel. Mm-hmm. He was a freshman. And obviously, you know, when you're, as Jay said, it's kind of like 18 to 20-year-olds being 18 to 20-year-olds. Stuff like that happens, but it definitely, you know, we might look back on it as something of a turning point for this 2018 U of A baseball team.
You know, Michael Lev in softball does the same thing. Strikes a guy out, gets a pop-up, and it's just staring daggers into the opposing bullpen.
I was getting a little heated with the umpire.
Oh, he's the worst.
One of these recent games, we have a thing, you're not allowed to hit a like hard ground ball back at the pitcher, basically. There's like an alley. It's just, you know, for safety reasons. Right. I don't totally agree with it, but
if you do, it's a dead ball, batter's out. Michael and I play on the same softball team. Here's the background.
Right. So yeah. I hit one of those.
Right.
And it was from my viewpoint, was clearly outside of the line.
Yes,
he called it inside the line and called me out. And needless to say, I was not happy about that situation.
Yes. That was.
I just was saying, no, you're wrong. Yeah.
So are slow pitch softball pitchers now wearing those cages? Like
sometimes.
Sometimes. There's a couple guys in our league that do, believe it or not. Yeah, you wear the cage. I don't know. To me, you couldn't pay me enough to pitch. But Michael Lev, to his credit, mixes speeds, will quick pitch you every once in a while, does a really, really good job of keeping people off balance. Speaking of legends in their field, here's a segue. Thursday afternoon on the northwestish side of McHale Center, they will be unveiling the Lute Olson statue. Greg, you've been writing about the need for a Lute Olson statue for 10 years. It seems like it really picked up some steam after Robert Robbins took over as Arizona's president and after Dave Hickey stepped in as athletic director. What do you anticipate the afternoon and the ceremony being like?
A lot of it will spin on who is there.
Right.
I mean, Steve Kerr's got that day off. If he flies in,
that'd be cool.
Tom Tolbert could fly in. Who knows who's going to be there?
Right.
Sean Elliott could fly in. The Spurs are off that day.
Mm-hmm.
To me, a lot of it will be determined by who is there. Because Lute can't carry it himself. He's not going to give a stirring speech.
No, that's just not him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got to orchestrate it right to make it fit.
Uh-huh.
Because it's a really big moment. I've been here long enough. I went to the Button Salmon statue dedication.
Mm-hmm.
His sister was there. She was in her mid-80s, and she had drove over from Yuma. And it was one of the most sobering moments I've had ever in newspapers. It was a really nice dedication outside of the McHale, you know, front doors there. And so I went up to his sister and started talking about him. She was just sobbing.
Wow.
And I realized, oh, wait a minute. There's something really sad connected to this, even though it was 70 years ago.
He was a young man who died.
Yeah, and she was all into that. So that left a lasting memory on me. I hope this one does too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And again, you make such a good point about it fitting the person. Lute Olson's not a look at me guy, I don't think.
Mm.
He's understated. His comments, if he does speak, will be, I think, probably very brief. I wonder if they can capture him in this event. And I wonder, frankly, I wonder what the dang statue is going to look like.
I was just going to ask, do we know what it looks like?
We don't.
They have a picture of him at the end of the national championship game where he's kind of waving.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a good look for him. If it is, fine, but mm-hmm. I'd rather have something else that shows him more of the force
right.
that he was. Because he was the biggest force in this league for 20 years in all sports.
Sure. Michael, you obviously paid a little bit of attention from Los Angeles when Lute Olson was was at his heyday. What struck me even as a young man when I was around him and their team was just how physically striking he was. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who looks like he should be chiseled out of something. It was Lute Olson that even in his 50s and 60s, the man could wear a suit. The man, he was still working out. I mean, up until when he retired from the U of A. I mean, this was an athlete and a guy who I think certainly looked the part. You know, this isn't trying to make somebody who looks like me handsome. Luke gave them pretty good stuff to draw on, I think.
The thing that I did not fully appreciate about his time here until I came here and heard about it more, read about it more. So I didn't realize that Arizona was not a powerhouse in any way, shape, or form until he got here and turned it into one.
Right. They had had some good years. The community would come out and support a winner, but it was a baseball school.
Mm-hmm. They had about a 6-year bad period when they entered the Pac-10. Mm-hmm. They'd had 5 good years under Fred Snowden when McHale Center opened in, about a 6-year really bad period. Mm-hmm. And he just took over.
Has enough time elapsed, Greg, and I think I know the answer to this question, but has enough time elapsed that whatever fences were torn down at the end of the Lute Olson era within McHale Center have been built back up?
Yep. I don't know what to compare it to you.
No.
In sports, where someone else has had a turbulent ending or a messy ending, because he had put everything in the bank the first 25 years. Mm-hmm. And those last 3 years, I don't think mattered.
Do you think this matters to him, the statue?
Yes, because, as you said, I wrote something about it maybe whatever time it was, 18 months ago or so.
Right.
And that week of all times, I was getting on a plane to go to a Pac-12 basketball road trip, and Lute and his wife Kelly were on the plane. Mm-hmm. And they came, in fact, they sit by me.
Wow.
This happens to Greg a lot.
Which was kind of uncomfortable. It was Southwest, and they were like the last two seats. And they come on and go, no, don't sit here.
You didn't do the vomit bag move? The vomit bag move's a good one. Go ahead.
Doesn't work anymore. So anyway, they sit down, and Kelly was just effusive and saying, oh, thank you so much for saying that. We wanted to get it out. Mm-hmm. I don't say this to reflect on me. It's just that I was really caught off guard that they cared.
Right.
So I have a question for you guys about this. Do you think that any members of the media, I mean, you're going to be there, are going to ask about the current state of affairs of Lute Olson or anyone else who's there with all this stuff going on with the FBI? Or do you think that's kind of like not kosher to ask on that particular day?
I don't know. I mean, to me, it kind of all depends. I guess it depends. You know, it may depend on what he alludes to in his statements. It may depend on what Dave Hickey says. You know, if Dave Hickey sits there and doubles down on the proud tradition that Lute has built up, that Sean Miller is continuing today, maybe do you then ask, hey, what do you make of what's happened the last 6 months? But that's a really fine needle that you're going to have to thread, I think.
Well, Lute's not going to answer it.
Right. Right.
He won't even touch it.
Right.
I mean, he knows the ropes. I think it'd be inappropriate.
Yeah.
You think Sean Miller will even be there?
I don't know.
Great question. Has Sean Miller surfaced from his bunker or wherever he's been since the last press conference that he had after the last game?
I don't believe
he's been spotted recruiting like a time or two, right?
Right. And he hired an assistant earlier today, Danny Peters. Although, you know, there's no real saying. I mean, I don't think we know yet whose job he takes. I mean, they have two openings on that staff. You know, it's possible. I don't know if Danny Peters is the number 3 assistant or the number 1 assistant.
He'll never say.
I mean, we're just going to have to see what everybody makes, I guess, to do all of that. But
if you had, you know, you mentioned Steve Kerr maybe being there or Sean Elliott. If you were off to the side with them, one-on-one, away from everyone, it seems like it would be a natural topic 100%. To come up, right?
Yeah.
You got to ask Steve Kerr because he might just say this isn't the occasion to talk about it. Mm-hmm.
But Steve Kerr also has an informed, insightful opinion on just about everything.
Yeah. He's the one guy who may talk about it.
Yeah. For you, Greg, it's hyperbole to say that Lute Olson put Tucson on the map. But did Lute Olson put Tucson on the map?
I think so. I mean, I moved here when Arizona Athletic Department was a baseball and nothing. I mean, they didn't have women's sports then, so they had no softball vision or anything. And Arizona football was solid, but there was no community pride in U of A sports. None.
I always,
boom, they had it.
I always thought that once Arizona started beating UCLA, in particular in basketball, Arizona then believed that it was on par with UCLA as a university. You can't buy that amount of pride. You can't buy, I mean, the greatest marketing campaign in the world doesn't have you believing that you're on par with Stanford and UCLA and USC and Washington. I still maintain, and it's, I'm probably stealing one of your old takes, Greg, that Arizona joining the Pac-10, now Pac-12, may be the most significant sporting event in the history of the state. Yeah. Arizona and ASU.
Yeah. I mean, they were small time. It'd still be like New Mexico and UTEP.
What conference were they in before they came?
WAC.
The original WAC.
The original WAC.
Which was a better basketball league than the Pac-8. Uh-huh. But nobody around the country knew that.
It's crazy. For you, Greg, I mean, you've known Lute Olson for 30 years.
Mm-hmm. I was there the day of his press conference when he was hired.
Really? Wow. What was that like?
I remember a lot of it.
Yeah?
He came over and talked off to the side afterward. You could talk, which Sean Miller never does.
Right.
And he told, I remember distinctly him telling me, I like working with the press. I'll be willing to work with you on anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't like one guy in Iowa, and that guy from Iowa was standing right there.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Ron Malley. I can't believe I remember his name. And so he eventually, I said, what happened? And he told me why he didn't like him and everything. But he goes, that's not going to happen here. He was great.
For you, he's a guy you've known so long. Will you be watching this whole ceremony a little bit differently? Just given your history with him?
Yeah, because it makes me feel really old. Because it's come and gone, you know?
Yeah.
The funniest thing that ever happened on that first day was he coached Luero High School in Anaheim, where my wife went to high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, hey, you know, you're trying to make small talk. And I said, hey, my wife was at Luero when you were the head coach there. And he goes, oh. So I knew then there wasn't going to be a friendship, which was good. Because, I mean, how many people would just go, oh. They wouldn't go, oh, what year, da-da-da.
I mean, that's not exactly a huge school. That'd be like me saying to Rich Rodriguez, hey, I'm also from Granttown, West Virginia, and have him be like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to some of the sights and sounds of the Lute Olson statue. Again, this is something I think was a long time coming. I'm not sure it's perfect.
Yeah.
The location to me seems a little weird. Even Lute has kind of said that. The location's a little weird. I think the timing, like a Thursday afternoon in April, it could be hot. It could be really hot.
Oh, I think it's going to be under awnings.
But you know what? I think that if we waited for the perfect day may never come. So it's a good deal that they're doing this now. And I look forward to seeing what you think of the whole ceremony and how Lute and all those guys are doing. That'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. For Michael Love and Greg Hansen. All right, next week we've got number 100. We got to do something, right?
Oh, yeah.
We will.
Yes.
Attention. No promises, but we might do something special.
I think we should. I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.